You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The Flecheros, or Arrow People, are an uncontacted indigenous tribe in the Brazil-Peru border of the Amazon rainforest. They've had virtually no interaction with the modern world. National Geographic sent Scott Wallace, a writer, photographer, and broadcast journalist who specializes in reporting on conflicts over land resources and ideology, along with indigenous activist Sidney Posiolo, to learn more about the tribe. Mr. Wallace has written a book about his journey called The Unconquered. It is published by Crown, and I'm very pleased to welcome him back to our show today. Hello.
Thank you very much. It's a real pleasure to be here.
You set off on June 8, 2002 for the Amazon jungle. Where exactly were you going?
This is an area in far western Brazil. The staging area is a place called Tabatinga, which is on the border of Colombia, Peru, and Brazil, in far western Amazon. And we were going into an area called the Javari Valley, which is fast on the border of Peru.
And what is going into such a remote place involve?
It's pretty involved, actually, to get there. A couple of weeks of river travel. This was a Lewis and Clark-style expedition, 34 men, including 20 Indians from three friendly contacted tribes. But the expedition unfolded in stages.
Three different tribes because of the different languages?
Correct. One of the things that Sidney Posuelo, who's the leader of the expedition, the main character of my book, and the founder of this curiously named entity, the Department of Isolated Indians, within Brazil's Indian Affairs Agency, was leading this expedition. He wanted to have various indigenous languages represented on the expedition in case of an inadvertent contact with the Arrow people in the deep jungle.
Hadn't you been to the Amazon before?
Yes.
Which would have prepared you for the difficulties that you'd face?
Well, I'd been in the Amazon several times before, but never like this. I'd been in some remote places, but places you can get to by bush plane arriving on some remote airstrip or by boat. This journey involved actually crossing over the frontier into the completely wild Amazon, and this was of a totally different order of magnitude than anything I had done before.
Mostly on foot?
Mostly on foot. It began on boats, as I was saying, 2 weeks of river travel.
And you had to build your boats?
Eventually. Mm-hmm. Not the ones we went upriver in. We came out a different river and built boats to get out. But it involved, in between, there was this grueling 23-day trek through the land of the Arrow people by foot.
And what were you hoping to do, to contact the Arrow people who don't seem to want to talk to anyone?
No, no. Posuelo, the leader of the expedition, has led Brazil into a new era of not contacting the last of the uncontacted tribes. But in order to gain protection for these uncontacted tribes and to keep intruders out of their land, the dimensions of their territory need to be mapped. And that's what we were doing, going in to map their territory. Of course, it makes for this strange, kind of dangerous, paradoxical quest, because there is a possibility of contact when you enter the land of such a tribe, even though the intention is not to make contact.
And the response usually is arrows. Is that what they call the Arrow people?
That's correct. Because almost nothing is known about this tribe, we don't know what they actually call themselves or what language they speak. They're known as the Arrow people because they have a reputation for being deft archers disposed to use their arrows to repel all intrusions.
Well, as more and more people go to the Amazon to tap its natural resources and to convert the indigenous people, is it still possible for a tribe to completely avoid contact with the outside world?
It's getting increasingly more difficult to do so. The area where the Arrow people themselves are holding forth is a pretty well protected, very out-of-the-way place, difficult access for outsiders.
So they're protected just by the land itself.
The geography protects them, and there are legal protections in place now and actual control posts that are that control access to the main waterways into this region that the that Brazil's Indian Affairs Agency has erected to protect the uncontacted tribes.
Do we know how many other uncontacted tribes there are in the area? And would they all be in that area?
Well, in Brazil, there are known to be, the Department of Isolated Indians has confirmed the existence of 26 uncontacted tribes. In the area that we went into, there are eight. The Arrow people are one among eight in a large wilderness area.
Do we know anything more about them other than they're very good at archery?
We know that they are completely self-sufficient. They are able to live completely from the jungle independently of us. We know they also they're agriculturalists. They are semi sedentary, so they feel secure enough in the area that they're living in to actually have gardens under cultivation. Other uncontacted tribes are communities in flight who must be on the run all the time. They're nomads because of the pressure on their land.
Do the Arab people see all outsiders as their enemies? Do they fight with other uncontacted tribes?
We don't know that because they do inhabit such a difficult to access region. We don't know the particulars of that kind of thing, but it's pretty clear that they are very suspicious of us in any case. Whether they conduct warfare with other indigenous, uncontacted indigenous groups, it's hard to say.
My guest is Scott Wallace. He's written a book called The Unconquered, In Search of the Amazon's Last Uncontacted Tribes. But that wasn't your original idea, was it? Your original idea was to profile Sidney Pozuelo. That's what
correct.
National Geographic had sent you down to do. So how did it grow into this story about the Arrow people?
Yeah, so Sidney Pozuelo is this incredible character who forged a new policy in Brazil's Indian Affairs Agency to leave the last uncontacted tribes alone. And National Geographic called me and asked if I was available and willing to go to Brazil to profile Pozuelo. But Pozuelo was about to leave on this open-ended expedition into the deepest Amazon to track this group, the Flecheiros, the Arrow people. And so if I wanted to profile Pozuelo, I had to go on this journey. And really, what better way to profile a man than to see him really in action, which this expedition was in all full-blown living color.
Well, since he brought along his young son, I guess he assumed that it wouldn't be a problem for you.
He actually did think it would be a problem for me. Originally, I was supposed to be just on the along for the ride upriver.
And he seemed to not really appreciate your presence for a while. He's kind of an irascible character.
Exactly. But as we went upriver, he did say to me, you know, if you'd like to come on the overland journey, you'd be welcome to. And I realized that I could not really in good conscience, write a story for National Geographic that said, and with that, Pozuelo disappeared into the jungle and National Geographic went home. You know, you couldn't do that.
I stayed in São Paulo.
Right.
Pozuelo is a sertanista. What does that mean?
Sertanista is a Brazilian word that derives from the another Brazilian word, the sertão, which is the backwoods of Brazil. And a sertanista is a wilderness scout, backwoodsman, adventurer, ethnographer, Indian rights activist. They are the agents of contact who, for the past 100 years, have ventured into the Amazon to make contact with the so-called wild Indians. But it was Pozuelo who led this change in the policy from contacting those groups to identifying the lands where they live and now just to leave them alone.
Well, originally he was involved in contacting these groups, and then he changed his mind?
He had a change of heart in mid-career. He actually had notched 7 first contacts, which were, it was a badge of honor to have a number of first contacts as a sertanista, and he had notched 7 of them. But what he found was inevitably, even though the effort was to make peaceful contact and then protect the Indians. They would begin to die off from epidemics they have no immunity for, and inevitably the Indians would succumb to disease and their lands would be overrun, their culture would disintegrate, and it was a losing proposition for the Indians.
But aren't there a lot of people in Brazil who would welcome that kind of situation?
Absolutely. In fact, so, the
Sertanistas... Is Pascoal a controversial figure?
He's very controversial, and the work that he does is very controversial, especially on the Brazilian frontier, where the pressure is so intense to get into Indian lands, because a lot of the resources have been dissipated elsewhere, and the last stands of really precious hardwoods, mahogany and so forth, gold, oil and gas in the subsoil, all that, you know, all those resources are in Indian lands, and there's intense pressure to get at them.
Although once you clear the land, I understand, it turns into something like desert.
That's
not the richest soil in the world.
No, it's actually the nutrients in the rainforest, they're all in the trees themselves. So when you cut the trees down and clear the land, it's only good for a couple of years and then it turns sterile.
So on the one hand, you have the prospectors and you have the people who would like to log this land opposed to him. And then you also have missionaries who are opposed to him.
Yeah.
They see their job as saving souls, and he's preventing them from doing that.
That's correct. He has a very negative view of the missionaries. He said, you know, when we make contact with the Indians, we begin the process of destroying their universe. And it can begin with something as simple as saying, our God is better than yours. And so he has takes a very dim view of missionary work for the most part.
Well, in other contexts with isolated tribes over the years, there's been a trade-off. They were unhappy about some of the things that contact brought, but they were happy about the steel axes and things like that.
Yes.
Because it made their lives easier.
Yeah, totally. Actually, and there were among the three tribes that were represented on our expedition, we had a couple of Marubo Indians with us who were contacted by actually new tribes mission from the United States. But the interesting that you mentioned steel and axes, because those commodities are highly valued even by the uncontacted tribes. They will steal from loggers or they're traded through obscure trade routes. But even the flecheros, who have virtually no contact with the outside world, we found evidence that they are in possession of at least a couple of axe heads and probably a couple of machetes. And we gave them some, too. We left a few at key moments in the expedition of high tension as gifts to show our peaceful intentions.
What did the people from these other tribes feel about what you were doing?
Are
they interested in protecting the uncontacted tribes?
Yes, I would say. So we had three different tribes with us. I would say there was maybe a little bit of a mixed opinion among them, but the general feeling, I think, was that they agreed with what Pozuelo was doing. They were not happy about the way contact had gone with their own groups, particularly the Métis, this one group with us. There were 12 members of the Métis in our expedition, and they had only been contacted in the past generation. They remembered what life was like before contact. More than half of their tribe, two-thirds of their tribe, died off within 2 years of contact because of the epidemics introduced from outside by whites.
And what about the Brazilian public in general? Have polls been taken? Do we know whether they think that these tribes should be protected?
That's a really good question. I hope my book contributes to that discussion in Brazil. It's going to be published later this year in Portuguese in Brazil, and I hope it opens up discussion about it. I don't think there are any polls, though.
But Brazil is a country that is kind of proud of its mixed race history. Mm-hmm. At the same time, it seems that doesn't extend to the peoples of the Amazon.
They're
looked upon like Native Americans were looked upon in this country until fairly recently.
Yeah, they're seen as backwards, primitive, savages. Pozuelo said to me, you know, many officials in our government are ashamed that we still have naked Indians in the jungle with bows and arrows. They're ashamed of it. I think it's beautiful.
My guest is Scott Wallace. His book, The Unconquered, In Search of the Amazon's Last Uncontacted Tribes, is published by Crown, We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We are back with Scott Wallace. His book, The Unconquered, In Search of the Amazon's Last Uncontacted Tribes, published by Crown. So the Brazilian government has changed its policies in regard to these uncontacted tribes. For a while, they just wanted to civilize them?
Correct.
When did that change? Is it Pozuelo?
Pozuelo, yes.
Persuaded them?
That's correct. Ever since the beginning of the 20th century, the policy was send the Sertanistas deep into the bush, make contact with the so-called wild Indians, resettle them in other places if necessary, move them out of the way of the advancing frontier, and protect them in a different spot. It was Pozuelo who convinced the Brazilian government and the Indian Affairs Agency, which is known as FUNAI, to change the policy to, instead of going out and contacting them, identifying where they are and divert the frontier away from those lands and protect those lands.
Well, I just read an article in which some people from Brazil kind of resented the world's attitude toward the Amazon. Mm. This person said, the Amazon is called the lungs of the United States, but what about us?
Right, yeah. So there's a very strong undercurrent of nationalism in Brazil, and they exploit the world's concern about environmental issues in the Amazon to paint the local environmentalists in Brazil as stooges or pawns of an international game, and that this is a vast conspiracy to keep Brazil from developing. That is, you know, one of the strong currents of thought in Brazil, but they don't realize that the Amazon is actually, not only is it a climate regulator for the world, but also for South America. And the same soy farmers who are raising these objections are going to find themselves without the rain they need for their crops if they keep deforesting the Amazon.
You said that Pozuelo is a controversial figure. He's had death threats, hasn't he?
He has a number of death threats. Working for FUNAI, the Indian Affairs Agency, and for the Environmental Protection Agency, IBAMA, in Brazil, are two of the most dangerous professions you can have in the frontier in Brazil. They are so widely loathed that death threats are routine.
I saw a documentary about a woman who works for that group, and she feared for her life constantly. Mm. But what about just walking through the Amazon, as you did? Was that dangerous?
Yeah, but a different sort of danger, sure. In fact, there was a hazard at every step.
Well, there were insects and snakes,
very poisonous, venomous snakes, pitfalls that you could fall into, rodent holes, branches swarming with fire ants, trees with 3-inch-long spikes on them that could impale your eyeball if you weren't careful, jaguars, anacondas. There were plenty of hazards, absolutely, at every step.
And did you fall and almost impale yourself at one point?
I did. I was almost impaled through the back by a spike that was hacked off by one of our lead scouts with his machete, and both of my feet went out from under me, and I came down on this very sharpened sapling and came with it about an inch of getting completely run through with it.
What about other people? Were any people hurt on this trip?
Remarkably, no. It's really a miracle. We were so far.
Because you're carrying equipment and also other things like that. You also have to carry camera equipment, don't you?
Right. And this is closed canopy jungle. We had almost no communication with the outside world for weeks at a time. And if one of us had gotten injured, there would have been no possibility of an evacuation. The nearest helicopter was probably 1,000 miles away. It wouldn't have been able to land anywhere in that jungle anyway for hundreds of miles around. It's just unbroken, you know, triple canopy jungle.
And then you can't carry all your food with you. So what were you eating?
Mm. So we were eating whatever the men could hunt and fish. There was a period of about a week where all they could find in terms of game were monkeys. So we had monkeys for breakfast, lunch, and dinner for a long stretch.
I would think there'd be a lot of vegetables or vegetation.
None. We didn't see a vegetable or a fruit for 2.5 months. There was none because we were in wild jungle, and we were not in the in any, you know, we didn't pass through any farms or anything like that. So there's no wild fruit out there, believe it or not. We didn't see anything.
When you first thought of going with Pozuelo, he tried to dissuade you. Why? Did he think that you might distort the goal of his mission?
Possibly.
Or just slow everybody down?
Yeah, I think it was more a question of slowing everyone down. I think, and you know, he said to me at one point, he said, well, you know, everyone looks at National Geographic for the pictures. They don't read the text. I said to him, you know, this is going to be a different kind of story. People are going to read this.
But you were really lucky, as you say, that nobody got hurt, because it would have been impossible to get any medical help.
That's correct.
I'm sure you brought a few things.
I was the pharmacy basically for the trip. I had a lot of different pills and painkillers and muscle relaxers and anti-malarials and things like that.
So if you were living off of not all that much food.
That's correct. We were.
Were you tired and hungry all the time?
Tired and hungry, just a gnawing hunger. I lost 35 pounds in the course of the trip. But there was always meat and fish. We always found something to eat. A lot of piranha, some enormous catfish.
Well, the piranha would eat you if you didn't eat them.
Well, the most dangerous thing about a piranha is actually eating it when you're famished without choking on the bones. Piranhas will actually not attack you unless you have an open wound or unless you step into standing water. In running, rushing river water, they don't attack.
Do they taste like other freshwater fish?
Yeah, that's a pretty tasty.
Like trout?
It's a pretty tasty white meat, but it's so bony. You got to be really careful with the bones.
We tend to think of there being no areas in the world that are untouched anymore, which makes Scott Wallace's adventures in the Amazon all the more exciting. He is here talking about his new book called The Unconquered, In Search of the Amazon's Last Uncontacted Tribes. It is published by Crown. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. You were the people who you were going with, these people from these various tribes, your scouts, were they curious about the United States?
They were very curious about where I came from. The United States to them didn't really, they really couldn't fathom what it was. It was just like my town. You know, one day we were.
It's hard for me to fathom Washington, D.C. also, so I guess I'm not surprised.
They would be amazed when they asked me, how do you get back to your home from here? And I would explain, you know, that I would take a plane to Caracas and another one to New York, and it would take, you know, so many hours. And it was just, they couldn't really wrap their minds around it. They asked me at one point, so do you have forests up there, like, you know, with all these trees? And I started to tell them, yes, but, you know, at a certain time of year, it begins to get cold, and then the leaves turn yellow and orange and red, and then they fall off. And then it gets so cold that this white stuff starts to fall. And the river, it gets so cold that the rivers become hard, and you could actually walk on them. And they would just, like, look at each other in amazement and say, no, that's not possible, you know. And they'd want to hear these stories time and time again, I would explain to them. And I'd never tire of hearing it.
Claude Lévi-Strauss wrote about how eventually he came to accept the fact that he was European and couldn't do all the things that the indigenous people of the Amazon he was with did. I think it was eating live maggots or something like that. But what happened when you were offered monkey or electric eel to eat?
It was actually good.
Did they glow?
Those are really dangerous too. But I was offered some smoked eel. After all the, you know, other stuff that I had eaten on the course of the trip, it actually tasted like a delicacy. I didn't have to deal with, you know, maggots or larvae, anything like that. It was a little bit of a stretch from the normal diet, yeah.
As you moved deeper into the jungle, you came upon signs of the Arab people. What did you see?
We saw abandoned fishing camps, lean-tos, constructed crudely from sticks and thatched leaf thatching, discarded ceramic bowls in some cases, places where they'd slept on the ground and left indentations in the earth where they'd spread leaves out and slept there. Then we'd find skulls, tapir jaws left in the clefts of trees, like perhaps a kind of totem. So, as we got deeper and we began to see signs that we were actually really close to them, like fresh footprints in the mud.
But you ever catch a glimpse of them?
Some of our scouts did. And this incredible moment ensued where our lead scouts caught a glimpse of two of them dashing across a makeshift log bridge and disappearing into the jungle on the far side of the river.
But since they have a reputation for defending their territory, weren't you a bit afraid? Could you have been attacked?
Certainly. There were only two of them when they first saw us and took off running. But from that moment on, the clock was really ticking, and the fear was that they would, that those two obviously were going to go back to their village and report what they had seen, and that within a short time they could possibly mass forces for an attack.
But that didn't happen.
Doesn't
Pasuela also employ certain tactics to prevent an attack?
That's correct. Because he's a skilled Sertanista with all these experiences in how to make peaceful contact with the Indians, he would leave gifts at certain places, like right there where that makeshift bridge was. He ordered three shiny aluminum pots to be buffed and then left as a peace offering. So they couldn't miss them. He actually had ordered them left up off the ground, hung from a piece of cord between two branches, so they could see that they were real offerings of peace.
As opposed to something you just left behind.
That's correct. Now, the other thing was, though, that Pozuelo, in his calculus, was bring a lot of men. We were 35, 34, and weapons, long weapons, long rifles, that they could, highly visible long rifles, so that they could see that we were many and that we were well-armed to dissuade them from attacking us.
You've said that the Arrow people and others like them are the only groups that have figured out how to live in the rainforest without destroying it. How do they manage to do that?
They've evolved a way of life over thousands of years that is perfectly suited to this environment. They know how to live in it. This is their land.
We got a message from someone, a Brazilian in New York, who said that many people in Brazil support Pozuelos. But when he's gone, do you think that others will pick up the fight?
Well, he already is gone, as a matter of fact, and others have picked up the fight. So Pozuelo ended up getting sacked for his insubordination. He's never been much of a diplomat, and he made public statements that got him in trouble, and he got fired. So his work continues, although he's no longer in the position.
The book opens with you forgetting to buy boots. What do you wish that you'd known before you went on this trip?
Well, I wish I had had a little bit more time to prepare for it. I had to be in Brazil in 5 days from the time I got that call. I probably would have spent more time, conditioning myself physically. And frankly, I'm not sure I even would have done it if I had really known what I was getting into. It's one of those things that, it was a great experience, but it was probably the most difficult thing I've ever done as a journalist.
But do you think that this is still a losing battle, whether somebody else picks up the fight for Pozuelos or not? It does require funding, and that's not always available. Also, we're talking about loggers, drug dealers, miners, farmers, so many people who all have interest in this area. Eventually, these tribes, as good as they are as marksmen with bows and arrows, eventually are going to be overwhelmed, as so many other uncontacted tribes have.
It is a discouraging picture, but the fight is worth engaging. The indigenous people of the Amazon have effectively protected huge swaths of the virgin jungle from destruction. If you look at satellite imagery from outer space, you can see that indigenous lands actually hold back the tide of deforestation. So a lot of the support for indigenous people comes from outside, which is one of the reasons why nationalists in Brazil are always raising the specter of an international conspiracy. But they deserve, the indigenous people deserve our support, and together we can make a difference and we can hold back this tide.
Was it as difficult getting back as it was getting there? We talked earlier about making dugouts.
So once we crossed through the land of the Arrow people, we stopped in the middle of the jungle, and from scratch, our men built two enormous dugout canoes, one 60 feet long, the other 47 feet long, even carved the paddles, and we rowed out in these canoes to a point in the river that was deep enough for us to be extracted by a boat. So it was a long way out. We got in, and it was a long way out.
Scott Wallace is a journalist whose assignments have taken him from the Himalayas and the streets of Baghdad to the Alaskan Arctic and the Amazon. His book, The Unconquered, In Search of the Amazon's Last Uncontacted Tribes, is published by Crown. And I thank you so much for being with us today to talk about it. And let's hope that the Arrow people are able to hold out for just a little longer.
Thank you very much. It's been a real pleasure to be here.